Well, welcome to Oak River Church. I'm Sandy Phillips, the lead pastor here, and we are glad you're here. If you're a guest, welcome. We're happy you're here. We can tell you what we're about in four words: loving God and loving people. That's what we're all about. Everything we do, everything we say, everything we plan, it's really all about loving God and loving people. And so we're really happy you're here. If you would like to take the connection card out of your program and fill that out, we would appreciate it because we love to hear a fresh perspective on your experience today. If you don't want to fill out the personal information, we won't share that with anybody if you do. But if you don't feel comfortable filling that out, just turn it over on the back if you would. Take like 60 seconds. And the box that says "My First Impression," we would really like to hear your comments on those three things. And be honest, it's okay. We can take it. We welcome those things because we want to get better at what we do. We want to get more friendly to people who come in here, friendly in a way that I mean that you feel comfortable when you come in. You feel welcomed and accepted. So if you could take that out, fill it out for me, I would greatly appreciate it. And then if you take it back to that table where you see three red bags back there, there will be Suzanne Dodd standing back there to greet you. If you give this card to her, she will give you a gift bag in exchange with some goodies in it, and you won't be sorry. It's yummy stuff in there, okay? So thanks for that. And I want to say thanks to Revolution for being in here today. It is great having you in here again. I actually was talking with Chris this week at the office, and I was like so pumped up about the message God was giving me for today. And I was like, oh man, I wish Revolution was going to be in there this week, because this message, I would really like for them to hear this message. She goes, well, let's call Karen and see what she thinks. And I go, oh, yeah, good idea. I didn't think of that. So we called Karen and said, what do you think? And Karen said, yeah, we'll do some switching around. But I'm really glad you're in here. I want to just say thanks for coming. I love that you're in here. Woohoo! Yeah, we're happy you're here. Also, I heard they had an incredible game night last night, and Chris Hahn was finally unseated. Yes! Yes! They had like 20-some people here playing games and winning prizes. And who's Nick is the new champion. Yes. Way to go, Nick. So I'm glad they had fun. That's good. Today we start a new series for the month that we're calling Need Glasses. Need Glasses, question mark. Basically, it's all about seeing ourselves and others through the eyes of God. So today I'm going to start the series out with a sermon titled Seeing Me as One of a Kind. Next week, Dave Walker will pick it up. I'm looking forward to hearing from him. He's going to share a message he's calling Seeing the Fullness of Love. And any of you who know Dave knows he loves to talk about love. And I really like that about him. I value that. I really felt like the Lord spoke to me actually maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago and said, have Dave Walker speak on Valentine's Day. Very specifically. Have Dave. So I'm excited next week that Dave's going to be sharing on seeing the fullness of love. But today we're talking about seeing me as one of a kind. It was funny this week as I was typing this because I kept typing the word kind wrong. And you know what I was typing? King. Judy knows because she was typing the sermon notes. I just kept automatically, you know, you do ing at the end of a lot of words. So I kept typing in king instead of kind, and I would get frustrated. I'm like, ugh. And it was like God said, yeah, you are one of a king. You are one of a king. You're one of a kind and you're one of a king. The first scripture I want to share with you today, it comes from Ephesians 2:10. And it says this: for we are God's masterpiece. He has created us anew in Christ Jesus so we can do the good things he planned for us long ago. Love, love, love this verse because the word masterpiece is used. We are God's masterpiece. And you know what I find amusing? That some of us think of ourselves rather than a masterpiece, we think ourselves as God's appliance. For we are God's appliance, mass produced, to do what he wants us to do. And I don't think it's like that. I think we each every single one of us have been handcrafted. We are a masterpiece. You are a Picasso. You are a one-of-a-kind, unique, handcrafted masterpiece. And I love that. I love that. Because it shows the intricacy in which you have been created. So if you want to follow along, there's a note page in your program. You can fill in the blanks if you like. Point number one, God handcrafted me. God handcrafted me. And I know that is hard for some of us to accept because we don't feel special. We don't feel like a Picasso. We feel like a reject. We don't feel like God took time to put in us what he wanted to put into us, to deposit into us what he wanted to deposit in us. But that is what the word says. And we find it in Psalm 139, 13 through 15 to begin with. David is speaking here and he says this, "You made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship," there it is again, "your workmanship is marvelous. How well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb." So God handcrafted each of us. Under that we see A, he made our body. He made our body. He made me tall. He didn't make me overweight. I did that on my own. But he made my body. He made my body. And sometimes when I look in the mirror at my face, I'm like, I wish this was different, and I wish this was different, and I wish this was different. God handcrafted my body. He put me together. B, he also handcrafted my soul, and that is my personality, my will, my emotions. Yes, he handcrafted those things. See, he handcrafted my strengths. When he was creating you, he said, okay, I'm going to deposit this into this person, this strength, because this strength will draw them closer to me, and it will draw everyone around them closer to me. But he also created our weaknesses. Paul says, in my weakness, I am made strong through Christ. In my weakness, Christ is more evident in me. And so he handcrafted my weaknesses too. Wow. E, he handcrafted my mind. Some he gave rather average intelligence. Some he gave above average intelligence. But you know what? It was his choice. He chose. He handcrafted your mind. Point number two. This is a big one. If we could all, each of us, no matter how young or how old or whatever position we find ourselves in, if we could get a hold of number two and really accept it and embrace it, I believe it would change our lives. Point number two, God knew every experience I would ever face at the moment he was crafting me. He knew every single experience I would ever face at the moment he was crafting me. How do you know that, Sandy? Because the Bible tells us that. In the continuation of Psalm 139, 16 through 18, David says, "You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out." Wow! Before a single day had passed. That rocks my world when I think about it. "How precious are your thoughts about me, O God. They cannot be numbered. I can't even count them. They outnumber the grains of sand. What is he saying that outnumbers the grains of sand? Not the number of people, the number of thoughts that God has about me individually. That's what outnumbers the grains of the sand. And when I wake up, you are still with me. Point A, God knew and planned my ancestry. He planned it. It was part of who I was going to be. He said, I'm going to give this person this set of parents. I'm going to give this person this set of grandparents and this other set of grandparents and this set of cousins and aunts and uncles and siblings. He planned it all out because all of those people would deposit something into your life to draw you closer to him. Every single case, in every single case, I know there are people who've had horrific childhoods. I realize this. Did God plan their ancestry? You know what? I believe he did. I believe he did. Did he want this person to hurt them or this person to injure them or this person to... No, not at all. God never wants that, never. But I believe he deposited into that person whatever strength, whatever steel they would need in their backbone to get through whatever horrific circumstance they were going to go through. I believe it. It's the only thing that keeps me sane at times, but I believe it. I really embrace that. B, he planned my childhood. He handcrafted my childhood. And if you're one of those people who've had a horrific something happen to you, please hear me. God did not will for a person to hurt you in any way, but God deposited inside of you whatever you need to get through that and become stronger as a result of it. I totally 100% believe that. See, he handcrafted my adulthood. He handcrafted my adulthood. D, he handcrafted my descendants, my children, my grandchildren, if I have any, my great-grandchildren. He handcrafted that because you see, I've told you before, God doesn't see time as a point from here to there. He sees it as all in a big bowl of liquid. And it's all mixed in there together. We see it in linear terms and he doesn't. He sees it all combined. And he handcrafted it. And then he handcrafted the length of my life. He handcrafted the length of my life. Oh, but Sandy, what about this person who died in a car accident? I don't think God planned that car accident, but I think he knew it was coming. And I think he knew that person was going to face eternity at that moment. I believe he numbers every one of our days. I totally believe that. And that sounds all well and good and ethereal, but let's look at a hardcore case of someone in the Bible whose life was handcrafted by God. Point number three, a look at one of God's craftsmanship, Gideon. Love the story of Gideon. We could probably spend 3 or 4 weeks just on the story of Gideon, but I'm going to try to condense it down into one sermon at least this time. Point number A, let's look at his history. We find it in Judges 6, 1 through 6 and verse 11. This is the history of Gideon. The Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight, so the Lord handed them over to the Midianites for 7 years. The Midianites were so cruel that the Israelites made hiding places for themselves in the mountains, caves, and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, marauders from Midian, Amalek, and the people of the east would attack Israel, camping in the land and destroying crops as far away as Gaza. They left the Israelites with nothing to eat, taking all the sheep, goats, cattle, and donkeys. These enemy hordes coming with their livestock and tents were as thick as locusts. They arrived on droves of camels too numerous to count. And they stayed until the land was stripped bare. So Israel was reduced to starvation by the Midianites. Then the Israelites cried out to the Lord for help. Why don't we wait till we're starving till we cry out to the Lord for help? I don't know, but I'm guilty. I've never physically starved, but I've starved in other ways. Why do we wait? Such a commentary on humanity. Then the angel of the Lord came and sat beneath the great tree at Ophrah, not Oprah, Ophrah, which belonged to Joash of the clan of Abiezer. Gideon, son of Joash, was threshing wheat at the bottom of a wine press to hide the grain from the Midianites. What a history, huh? Sandy, you could have chosen somebody better to talk about as an example of God's craftsmanship, I believe, than some kid of a farmer who was so terrified to thresh grain out on the mountainside where they normally would thresh grain, because then the wind would take away the chaff and leave the good seed, right? No, he had to hide in a pit, basically, and thresh out the wheat in a pit where the wind couldn't take away the chaff, and that therefore it left a lot more work for him to do. Hiding in a hole, the son of a farmer, hiding in a hole. This is God's craftsmanship that you're sharing with us today? Yes. Yep. Because I have a feeling that you, like me, don't often feel, when we're facing some dire circumstances, don't feel like we're in the middle of God's craftsmanship. But we often are. We always are. Let's look at his strengths and weaknesses. These will become very clear as we keep going. Strengths and weaknesses, Judges 6, 12 through 18. Now remember where he is. He's in a pit, and he's hiding, and he's working to get little bits of wheat for people to live on. The angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "Mighty hero, the Lord is with you." Does anybody else find that funny? He's the son of a farmer. He's hiding in a pit to thresh out a tiny bit of grain that his family can use to keep from starving. And an angel of the Lord appears to him and says, "Mighty hero, the Lord is with you." I think that's pretty much evidence that God handcrafted him before he was born. "Sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us," this, I relate to him so much. "Sir, if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? And where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about? Didn't they say the Lord brought us up out of Egypt? But now that the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites." Yeah, you start seeing his weaknesses pretty fast, don't you? "Then the Lord turned to him and said, 'Go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I am sending you.' But Lord," Gideon replied, "how can I rescue Israel? I'm the son of a farmer. I'm not a warrior. I'm not a king. I'm just this little itty bitty unknown person who's in the hole hiding from our enemy. My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh, and I am the least in my entire family." Did he need glasses or what? He needed some serious glasses. He needed to see himself as one of a kind. "The Lord said to him, 'I will be with you, and you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man.'" Yeah, the enemy that has so many camels that you can't even count them, you're going to destroy them as if they were all one man. "Gideon replied, 'If you are truly going to help me, show me a sign to prove that it is really the Lord speaking to me. Don't go away until I come back and bring my offering to you.' He answered, 'I will stay here until you return.'" I don't know how many signs Gideon needs, because if I'm in a pit threshing out grain and an angel appears to me, that's pretty much a sign. you know? Huh. And now this angel said, you're not going to be a farmer anymore. You're going to be a warrior. You're going to go out and conquer your enemy. Can you give me a sign this is going to really happen? See, experiences. Let's look at his experiences. Number one, he asked for and received a sign from God. You know, thank God I'm not God. Because I probably would have said, forget you, I'm going to go to somebody who really believes me. But instead, God patiently gives him a sign and consumes this offering that Gideon put on an altar. Consumes it completely. And then we see his response. Gideon, or Judges 6, 22 through 24. When Gideon realized, finally, that it was the angel of the Lord, he cried out, oh, sovereign Lord, I'm doomed. I have seen the Lord, the angel of the Lord, face to face. It is all right, the Lord replied. Do not be afraid. You will not die. And Gideon built an altar to the Lord there and named it Yahweh Shalom, which means the Lord is peace. The altar remains in Ophrah in the land of the clan of Abiezer to this day. Over and over again, you will see through his experiences God's patience. But I believe God handcrafted Gideon to be as needy and fearful as he was. Because then God's power was put on display in a more fabulous, dynamic way. Point number two, another experience, he was given a command. Finally, when Gideon built an altar and said, okay, I worship you, the Lord of peace. You are my peace. God said, okay, I want you to go and tear down this altar that's been built to the false god whose name is Baal. We find his response in Judges 6, 27. So Gideon took 10 of his servants and did as the Lord had commanded. Woohoo, obedience. Yes, but he did it at night because he was afraid of the other members of his father's household and the people of the town. You know, I don't blame him. I'd probably have done it at night too. Because what he was doing in tearing down this altar, what he was saying is, we don't worship these false gods of the people around us. We worship the one true living God. And he knew that would bring the wrath of his enemy down on him. So he said, okay, God, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it at night. Point number three, it actually says in Scripture that Gideon was then possessed by the Spirit of God. Okay, well then now he should be smooth sailing from this point on, right? Because he's been possessed by the Spirit of God. No more mistakes, no more fears, no more misgivings, right? You would think. Judges 6, 36 and 37 says, then Gideon said to God, if you are truly going to use me to rescue Israel as you promised, prove it to me in this way. Ah! And then you might have heard this part of the story. I don't want to go into it because of the time factor. But then he says, okay, God, I'm going to put this animal skin out at night on the altar. And I basically want to see that this animal skin is soaked with the dew of heaven while I sleep and everything around it is dry. And if that's the way it works, then I'll know that you're really sending me to do this job. So he woke up the next morning and that's what happened. Only the animal skin was soaked. Everything else was as dry as a bone. He was like, okay, now we're going to do it this way, God. If this is really you, if this is really you, God, then this time what I want to happen is everything else to be soaked and the animal skin to be completely dry. So God did it. Again, amazing. Amazing. I'm not suggesting that we offer those kinds of fleeces up before God. But I am so grateful that when I need God to step up and show me something, he is faithful to do it. He is really faithful to do it. Next experience. So Gideon finally accepted he was hearing from God. And he got this army together of 32,000 soldiers. And he said, we're going after the enemy. That's it. We're doing this thing. But point number four, his army was reduced by God. In some fun, creative ways, God said 32,000 is too many, so we're going to whittle it down to 300 men to fight against the enemy that is so numerous that you can't even count their camels. So what was Gideon's response? Judges 7:8. So Gideon collected the provisions and the ram's horns of the other warriors and sent them home. But he kept the 300 men with them. I got to respect the fact that he's willing to fight with 300 men. God put something, when he was handcrafting Gideon, he put something inside of him that needed a whole lot of proof. But once he got it, he was like, okay, we're doing this thing. And you see, some of us have the other tendency. We're ready to charge ahead before we get the proof, and then we turn tail and run when things get tough. So you got to give some kudos to Gideon there, at least. I love the next part, number five, known by God. And you know what? Gideon is not the only one known by God. We are all known by God. You'll see how I come to that conclusion after we read this. Judges 7, 8b through 15 says this. The Midianite camp was in the valley just below Gideon. That night the Lord said, get up, go down to the Midianite camp, for I have given you victory over them. But if you are afraid to attack, don't you love that God knew Gideon enough to say, I've given you the victory, but if you're afraid, here's what I want you to do. Go down to the camp with your servant, Pura. Listen to what the Midianites are saying, and you will be greatly encouraged. Then you will be eager to attack. So Gideon took Pura and went down to the edge of the enemy camp. The armies of Midian, Amalek, and the people of the east had settled in the valley like a swarm of locusts. Again, you see the vastness of the enemy there. Their camels were like grains of sand on the seashore, too many to count. Gideon crept up just as a man was telling his companion about a dream. It's a little humorous to me that God said, you're gonna win this battle, but if you're afraid, go up and just listen to what the Midianites are saying. And the place, the very place where Gideon just happened to go and sneak up and listen, this man was talking about this. Out of all the hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people, just so happened that Gideon came up to this one spot that he needed to hear this one story. How can you believe that's chance? It has to be handcrafted. The odds are too astronomically against it. The man said, I had this dream, and in my dream, a loaf of barley bread came tumbling down into the Midianite camp. It hit a tent, turned it over, and knocked it flat. His companion answered, your dream can only mean one thing. God has given Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite, victory over Midian and all its allies. When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he bowed in worship before the Lord. Then he returned to the Israelite camp and shouted, get up, for the Lord has given you victory over the Midianite hordes. Wow. Don't you love that story? And then the way they do the battle, it's really interesting reading if you want to keep reading this week. It's really interesting reading. But the point I want us to get, I hope I can accurately communicate, is that God handcrafted Gideon for that time. He handcrafted Gideon with all of his strengths and all of his weaknesses. And this week I was thinking about this and I'm like, God, what did that look like? What did that look like? And then I was like, I imagined, and this is purely fantastic, but it's based on that Psalm 139 passage where God says, I knew every one of your days before any of them came to be. I imagined God sitting in heaven with Jesus and the Holy Spirit and saying, okay, now we have another one to craft today. What shall we put in this one? well, let's give her parents who will provide great structure for her because she's going to need that. She will function best in a family that has a lot of structure. Let's give her the sweetest grandmas ever who will always love her and think she's the most wonderful creature ever. Let's put her in a family of 5 children and make her the middle child so she will learn to get along well with those older than her and those younger than her, and she will come to love peace. But let's make her the oldest daughter so she will have some qualities of the firstborn as well. Well, she will enjoy leading. And let's give her average looks, because we don't want her to be distracted by attention that she doesn't really need. It will distract her from her task that we've created her. Let's just give her average looks. And let's put inside of her a deep passion for teaching, because she will learn best when she's teaching, and she will bring the most honor to us when she's teaching. So let's put that inside of her. But let's give her average intelligence, because then she will always know that it's not her, but it's us. And let's put a little bit of steel in her backbone, because she's going to face some times in her life when she's going to need it. But let's balance that out with just a little bit of Southern sweetness. Just a little bit of Southern sweetness. What about all the pain she's going to go through? How's she going to survive? Oh, it will teach her compassion. It will teach her love for other people. It will show her to point people to us and to care deeply about them. Let's put in her an enjoyment of being in the kitchen, making simple meals, because she's going to have 3 boys who really like to eat. And let's also give her an ability to overlook dirty baseboards and remote control cars everywhere and army guys and Legos and computer parts. Let's just give her an ability to overlook that stuff, because that's really not that important. And let's give her a deep desire for mothering, but let's let her wait for about 8 years before she can have her first child, because in every day that she looks at her children, she will know they are gifts from us. And let's give her some part of her life where she's happily married, and let's give her some part of her life where she's happily single, because then she can focus all of her attention on us. You say, oh, Sandy, that's so self-absorbed. You know what it might be? But if God's thoughts of me are so numerous that they're more than the sands of the sea, why don't I just get in line with him? And I don't want to become self-absorbed, but I want to see me as one of a kind. And I want you to see you as one of a kind. You see, you may not be the kind of person who's going to end up with a lampshade on your head at a party. And it's okay, because God's probably going to put some other people in your life who are like that and need to be the center of attention. And so you're content to sit back and let them be the center of attention. But maybe God made you to be the kind of person who's going to be the lampshade on the head at the party. And then God's going to put other people in your life who are content to sit back and enjoy your antics. That is the beauty of hand craftsmanship. That is the beauty of it, because then we can all come to value every experience, every history, every bit of our ancestry, every bit of our uniqueness, every bit of our weirdness. Instead of somebody telling you, if you're going to be a Christian, you have to look like this, God says, no, you're mine. I handcrafted you. I will tell you how to be. You just stay close to me and you will live fully in the freedom that I plan for you. But here's the big crux of it. It takes a surrender to God's authority. It takes a surrender to God's plan. What does surrender mean? I believe it means a quiet acceptance of God's place. His place as creator, his place as sustainer, his place as God, as king, as friend, as Lord. It's a quiet acceptance of God as God. And then when you can quietly accept God as God, then all of your uniqueness, all of your hand craftsmanship will start to shine and put him on display. Not yourself, him. It will put him on display. We're going to have communion this morning, and I can't imagine that it could have been a better service to have communion. So if I could have somebody come up and play. The ushers are going to start passing this out. You see, communion to me is a quiet acceptance of God's plan. It's an acceptance of, okay, God, yes, I have sinned. I need your son. And now you've provided a way. It may not be the way I would have chosen, but I accept your way. And just so you know, if you're a guest today at Oak River Church, we practice open communion. You don't have to be a member here. If you believe that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, we invite you to participate in communion when it's passed around. But just hold the elements until the end and we'll all take it together. Just contemplate as Karen plays what your hand craftsmanship might look like. I gave you just a little bit of mine. What would yours look like? What would yours look like? And as we come to the table, thank God for his way through Jesus Christ. And said, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this to remember me." God, we thank you for the body of your son. We thank you for handcrafting the plan of redemption. And then, God, I thank you for making your handcrafted plan of redemption available to every single one of your handcrafted beings. do this in remembrance of you, Jesus Christ. Let's eat the bread. In the same way, he took the cup of wine after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant between God and his people, an agreement confirmed with my blood. Do this to remember me as often as you drink it. For every time you eat this bread and drink this cup, you are announcing the Lord's death until he comes again." God, I thank you for the juice and what it represents. God, there's so much about your plan I don't understand. There's a whole lot of unknown factors. But God, I quietly accept your plan. Accept the blood of your son as a sacrifice for my sins and as a way to breathe life into me and make me new. God, we accept that today. Amen. Let's drink the juice. Thank you for your attention this morning. It was great. I enjoyed speaking to you guys. I hope you enjoyed the lesson, the message. And I pray that it gets down inside of us and bears really good fruit.